Deadheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 97, top cigar of 2016 pairing. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, broadcast live around the world and picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We, of course, broadcast live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast on YouTube, and thanks to all of our podcast listeners out there. You know you're out there in droves, and we appreciate it. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Trippy Trent. Tripp, what's
good
going on tonight,
evening.
Brother? A little chilly.
Yeah, it's pretty chilly. It's a little chilly here. We've got a snowpocalypse going on. It's the worst snow I've seen since 2008, which is when we had 18 inches, and I was stuck inside my apartment for 9 days.
So you were telling me that like 10 inches fell overnight?
Yeah. So there was about 3 or 4 inches when I went to bed last night. When I woke up, there was about 10. And now we're probably right around 11. It snowed all morning, but not very much.
I was going to make some crack about the fact that, you know, we typically get 8 to 10 inches in a snowfall, but obviously we're geared for snow removal. You guys are not geared for snow removal, and that makes an enormous difference.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're not ready for snow removal at all. Most people don't own snow shovels. There are no plows. I don't believe the city I live in has plows at all, because I haven't seen any. The only clearing that we get is from cars driving over the snow and pushing it off to the side.
Yeah, that's not good.
You don't want to be the one who's pushing it off to the side.
No, you do not. A reminder that Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Gurkha Cigars, makers of the world's finest cigars, try out the new Heritage, or Old Heritage, because the Heritage Maduro is kind of newish. It's end of 2015, pretty tasty cigar. Check that out at your local B&M. We're doing some pairings tonight, and it's not just about weather talk. We're doing some pairings tonight, and we're doing one of the top cigars of 2016, according to me, like I know anything.
According to you, this is the – was it the number 4 or the number 3? I think it was the number 4.
Boy.
Is that right?
You'd think I know because I spent like 15 hours on it. Number 1 was the Protocol Lancero. Number 2 was the Martial Law. No, I think it was number 3.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh, it was number 4. Number 3 was the Quick Draw Connecticut.
Oh, how could I forget the Quick Draw Connecticut? That Quick Draw Connecticut was like that cigar. I like Connecticuts, but like, you know, there's people that are daily Connecticut smokers. Like Paul Asadorian on Stogie Geeks is a daily Connecticut smoker. I've just never, it's never bit me, but the Quick Draw, I mean, I could literally wake, have a coffee, have a Quick Draw Connecticut. It was outrageously tasty.
I mean, the Connecticut wrapper, I feel like it spent so long being the redheaded stepchild of the boutique cigar industry.
The Rodney Dangerfield just doesn't get any respect at all?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody respected it. No boutique kind of craft cigar manufacturers were really making Connecticuts. And then in the last three years is when they've really begun to go from the stuff your grandpa smokes to something that is more appreciated. And it really does work fantastic with coffee in the morning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the stat that I hear thrown out there all the time is that like 70% of smokers out, like normal non-geek boutique-y smokers smoke Connecticut. And I could see that. I mean, that's, you know, I don't think most cigar smokers are even smoking into the medium category of cigars. So this is the number 4. It's a little magical. It's warped. And if you look on the top cigars list, you'll see them a few times. It's that Magic Aganorsa tobacco from the Tapsa factory. Casa Fernandez, man, I tell you, they've just got that tobacco locked down. I think ever since really Warped started coming out in 2014, I think pretty much everything they've produced, I've either liked, like I've enjoyed it, or it's just like blown me away.
Yeah, I completely agree. The only one that I didn't love that I can think of is the Oso.
Oh, really?
El Oso. It was too woody for me, I think.
Now, did you try the, because I think it came in a Mama and a Papa.
The only one I've had, I think it's called a Mama.
Bear. Okay.
Which is the Lancero.
Oh, see, that's the one I bought a box of, and I was, I don't know. I was super happy with it, but it was pretty
divisive. Wasn't a big fan of that one.
Fair enough. This is, of course, the Maestro del Tiempo, and we're smoking the 5205, The 5205 is a Lonsdale. So if you're not a Lancero smoker, there's a lot of people out there not Lancero smokers. The Lonsdale is a great alternative. 6 3/8 by 42 ring gauge. So a couple 64ths larger than a Lancero. True Lancero would be 38. A lot of Lanceros out there cheat and they're 40.
Some are even a 42.
Some are even a 42. But this is a true Lonsdale. It's a good size. And they're sold in boxes of 25. And what's cool about this, I'm just going to relight here because I'm talking too much and it's cold. And it's not fair on a lot of the cigars to be smoking this weather. But you know what?
No.
We're pairing tonight and I really need a cigar and I really need to pair it with something. But this uses 100% Aganorsa tobacco from the wrapper to the bind to the filler, which is fantastic.
Oh, love Aganorsa. Everybody who uses Aganorsa, I mean, it's hard to make a bad cigar with Aganorsa tobacco.
I kind of feel that. I kind of feel like, you know, I could go in there ham-fisted and make something smokable. Obviously, I could make something that tastes as good as this, but I feel like with Aganorsa tobacco, I could at least make something smokable.
Yeah, it seems like everything that has 100% Aganorsa is just super flavorful. Whether or not you love it, it's always going to be super flavorful.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would describe the strength, the nicotine strength of this to be just like a medium minus, but the flavor profile, you know, it ranges between, I'd say about a medium full, like medium plus, which is nice because, you know, it's a great way for cigar smokers who are looking to step it up in terms of the flavor profile, but aren't looking to get bowled over by nicotine. This is a great cigar for them. Now, 6 3/8 by 42, I'm probably guessing, you know, if I smoke really slow, I can probably smoke this in about an hour and 40, but I could see guys powerbombing this in 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I take about as long as you, probably an hour and a half, hour 40, but I could definitely see you powering through this. And I don't think, because of this size, it's not like a Lancero where if you power through, it's going to get real harsh real fast.
That's true, yeah.
But the Lonsdale's a little more forgiving.
Yeah, Lonsdale's, that's a good way to put it. It's a little bit more forgiving. Because you do, you know, and as you alluded to, you do want to smoke it slower. Because it's a smaller ring gauge, it will tend to burn a little bit hotter. The hotter it burns, the less you're going to get those nuances of flavor. And when you're talking about 100% Aganorsa, you kind of want that tobacco to speak to you.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy. So, of course, we're not just here to smoke cigars tonight. We're here to do some pairings. And I kind of did a revival. I'm not sure why, but I did a revival of our one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. So tonight I've got a bourbon, a scotch, and a beer. And did you follow suit? Do you have a bourbon, a scotch?
I sure did. A bourbon, a scotch, and a beer. Specifically, one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
So now just a heads up to our audience, of course, we originally were thinking about pairing number one, which is the Protocol Lancero, but unfortunately Trips Local B&M didn't have them. We've done the Marshall Law already, which was just recently, and unfortunately the Connecticut, I'd smoke through it too fast because I can smoke that bad boy in about 30, 35 minutes, and given that this is a 58-minute show, I could smoke two back-to-back, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess you could. For some reason, that just doesn't sound appealing.
So instead, we've opted for this delicious Maestro del Tiempo, and it is delicious. It's got like honey. It's got a little bit of almost like a vegetal note. There's a little bit of white pepper there, but not like, you know, a pepper bomb. It's just got a little bit of character to it.
Yeah, and a little bit of sort of a. I don't want to say marzipan, but it's a sweetness that's marzipan-like.
You know, I tend to get that a lot out of the Aganorsa tobacco. It's this sweet character that I cannot put my finger on. It's like brown sugar caramelized, but molasses, but not. And
yeah, it's almost an umami kind of sweetness.
It's almost like weird. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, and it is weird, but I tend to get it in a lot of Aganorsa tobacco, and it's I find it very enjoyable. It's got a fantastic mouthfeel to it.
Yeah, I love it.
But since it is cold, and I'm looking over to see if my stout is frozen yet, it is not. The stout that I'm pouring tonight was not as high ABV as I would typically pour. So tonight, I'm going to start out with the classic American whiskey. I don't know if it's that classic because it's aged. And if you can see it, I'll hold it back. So the beautiful catch light I've got going tonight will show it off. So this is the Knob Creek Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. I've featured it on the show many times. First of all, it's small batch, which I appreciate. And small batch means that because typically when you have a scotch bottling or you have a whiskey, bourbon whiskey bottling, you don't just get it from one barrel. They'll take 30 barrels or 50 barrels or 100 barrels and they'll do what's called vatting. They'll put them all together, they'll marry them, and then they'll bottle them. Because you're kind of going for a consistent, you know, flavor characteristic of that bourbon or scotch. In this case, what makes this so unique is that it is a single barrel. And that's pretty rare, especially in the whiskey industry or in the bourbon industry. You typically don't see a lot of single barrel. So that means that every bottling will presumably, depending on how fast you drink through it, remember to drink better, not more. But assuming you're not going through a bottle a week, every bottle you drink of that would be from a different cask. So it's going to take on some slightly different characteristics because the wood's not going to be, you know, exactly the same. Little bit about Knob Creek, started by Booker No after the Prohibition. So this, I was going to say this century, but of course we're in the 21st century, not the 20th century anymore. The name for it comes from the stream in Kentucky, which flowed past Abraham Lincoln's childhood home. And you can see that, at least when I held it up, the labels kind of got that old-timey newspaper feel to it. This is 9 years. It is 120 proof, which means we're clocking in at 60% ABV. Ooh. And at 60% ABV, it is remarkably dangerously drinkable. Very dangerously drinkable. I'm going to take some noses, some tastes, and I'll let you talk about your first beverage tonight, Trip.
I'm drinking one that I've talked about with you, and I'm certain that Rob has had it on the show before, at least in some iteration. Elijah Craig Small Batch. This mm-hmm. is the newer No Age Statement version that came out. I think it came out last year.
Yes, sir.
Or it might have been the year before when they started the No Age Statement. As far as I can tell, I haven't had the what was it, the 10-year it was before, I believe. I haven't had that in a couple months because I drank it all. But to me,
I think it's actually the sorry to cut you off. I think it's actually the 12-year.
Oh, I believe you're right.
I've got a bottle scrolled away.
Yes, that is the 12-year that this replaced. It tastes about the same. I think a side by side, they might taste a little different. But it definitely brings back memories of drinking Elijah Craig 12. This is distilled and bottled by Heaven Hill Distillery, who they also make Rittenhouse, which you may have heard of. A super popular rye that's fantastic and very cheap. They also make everything from Evan Williams, which of course is very popular and you can find anywhere, but this is a much smaller batch, even though I don't think they disclose exactly what size a small batch is to them. Again, of course, made in Kentucky in Bardstown. Like most American bourbons, though not
all. Most American bourbons. Yep.
Not all. Used to be all.
So I see you doing a pouring there. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the nose on the Knob Creek is quite a bit sweeter than a lot of whiskeys. Even the Elijah Craig, I don't find the Elijah Craig as sweet as this. It's almost like a syrupy sweetness, like a maple, because I'm Canadian, maple syrupy sweetness. And then on the palate, it's a lot more subdued, and there's a little bit of that sort of bourbony pepper behind it, but it's not overwhelming, and it's going really well with the cigar because the strength level kind of kicks up to about a medium level and then just kind of takes a step back. I've certainly had like the Woodford Reserve, I think, would be a poor pairing with this Warped Maestro del Tiempo, because I think the Woodford's a little bit on the hot side, and it might run over some of the nuances in the cigar. How was the first couple sips of the Elijah Craig?
Yeah, I could definitely see the Woodford running over the cigar a little bit. The Elijah Craig's kind of a perfect pairing so far. It's not super sweet. It's a little bit on the dry side for bourbon. And you do get just a touch of not really a maple sweetness, more of a honey sweetness.
Lovely color on that.
Oh, yeah. It's got great color as always.
It's funny because I'm sitting here with a 9-year. No, I think yours is quite a bit darker. You know, this is kind of like a brown sugar color, and you've got more of an amber nut brown.
Yeah, I would call it amber colored. There's a little bit of spice to it, which kind of plays nicely with the cigar, and a touch of like a leathery and a woody kind of note.
I do like a little bit of leather in my bourbon, not so much in my cigars, but I do like a little bit of leather in my bourbon.
I absolutely agree. Not a big fan of leathery cigars, big fan of leathery bourbon.
Just a reminder to your audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, broadcast live. This is episode 97, top cigar of 2016 pairing. We're pairing the Maestro del Tiempo from Warped Cigars with a couple of different various beverages tonight. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Trippy Trent. We are, of course, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network, heard around the world. Hope wherever you're stationed, you're a little bit more bundled up, or maybe not bundled up if you're stationed somewhere warm, because she's cold tonight. And, of course, Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Talk to your local B&M about a Gurkha sampler today. They can find the right Gurkha for you because they have a lot of them. There's a lot of Gurkha cigars. And we're doing some bourbon pairings initially. We've got bourbon, scotch, and beer tonight. And, you know, I have to say at 60%, this Knob Creek is a little on the dangerous side.
I could definitely see that. The Elijah Craig only clocks in at 40%, but it still actually has a little bit of heat on the finish. I would suspect actually probably more heat than the Knob Creek does.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I don't know if it's because I was at the Octomore tasting last night and had just a crap ton of whiskeys. It's 60, actually the highest one of the night was 64%.
Wow.
And at 64%, it tasted like it was around 52, maybe 51.
That's incredible.
Dangerous. And I kind of reminded of that whiskey, that Scotch whiskey from this in terms of the alcohol strength, because like there's absolutely no alcohol burn to this whatsoever. Really, I just get a really rich, like I said, that sort of mapley, obviously the corn influence from the bourbon. And it's just like, I can feel it on my tongue after a sip. It's just really coating my tongue and my mouth. And I just, that flavor kind of really carries on. And I'm expecting that's probably as a result of being bottled at 120 proof.
Oh yeah. The higher proof, I mean, because you're not cutting that down with water, you end up with a much fuller mouthfeel than the kind of wateriness that comes with a typical 40%.
And I do like the fact that, again, because some bourbons can definitely run over cigars. We've had it on the show before, even with Habano wrappers, that Habano wrapper cigar has just been run right over by a bourbon. But the Saginaw tobacco is it's playing off nicely. Like I'm actually getting a little bit of, I want to say like a potting soil, kind of like a dry potting soil out of the cigar now. Cause the sweetness is kind of getting muted by the, you know, like the sweetness from the cigar is getting muted by the whiskey. So there's other flavor characteristics now coming through from the cigar for me.
I actually just got the same note. It's kind of that, the potting soil you get in a bag and it rips open while you're pulling it out of the car and you get that smell.
That's sort of sweet
that
potting
fresh,
soil.
Fresh, sweet soil.
Yeah.
And I definitely get a little bit of that from the cigar.
It's good. I mean, you know, if we were to do a short pour edition, I would be perfectly happy to just continue to drink this Knob Creek and smoke this Warped. And I think I'd obviously get pretty tanked because it's 60%. Oh, yeah. But this is a great pairing. And it's always dangerous when you start off the show with a really great pairing and you move on, because I'm never quite sure what I'm going to run into with the other two pairings.
You don't know. It could get better. But I think what we've learned so far is Maestro del Tiempo goes fantastically with bourbon.
It really does.
They just pair really well together.
So if you get a Maestro del Tiempo, you're a bourbon drinker, try your local bourbon, shoot us an email, surgeon@cigarfederation.com. Let us know how that pairing goes. We'll talk about it in the next show. I'm going to move on to my next pairing tonight. Getting a little highfalutin. double highfalutin, I think. So this is a kind of an interesting combination. I'll talk about that. So this is, I'll hold it back here so you can see. So this is an Adelphi bottling of a Boonehaven 24-year-old. So I'll just talk about that for a second. So what Adelphi does is they buy up the cask from the distillery and then they bottle it. So again, I was just talking about with the Knob Creek where they're bottling, and it's unique where they bottle a single cask instead of marrying casks. And that's what Adelphi's done here. So if you have another Boonehaven, even a 24-year-old Boonehaven, it's not going to taste like this because they're marrying all the casks together to get a particular flavor profile. In this case, they basically go through the dunnage warehouse and they say, okay, well, I'm going to try this cask, I'm going to try this cask, I'm going to try this cask, until they find a cask that is deemed exceptional. And I think they said that typically like 4% of the casks they look at, so it's a very low number. And then once they have that cask, they buy it and they bottle it. And I'll hold it up here. One of the three things that I like, first of all, bottle at cask strength, so they don't, you'll see it's getting a little cloudy there, and there's a reason for that, because it's cold, and it's not filtered.
So I've been meaning to ask you to get into your opinions on chill filtering.
Mm. So I have to keep my language clean because we're broadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network, but I think it's a shame to filter whiskey. I think it's one of those unfortunate marketing things where when you're typically what happens when your whiskey is about 45%+ ABV, if it gets a little cold, the whiskey tends to get cloudy, and you can see, or at least our people who are watching live can see that it is getting a little cloudy there. And that's the basically suspended particulates in the whiskey that are clouding up. What no chill filtration does is they go through and they remove a lot of that from the whiskey. And for me, I feel like anytime you're removing something after you've gone through the process of aging or distillation and aging, you're taking something away from that whiskey. Like, to me, it's like removing solids from coffee. Like, if you remove all the solids from coffee, you're removing some of the character of coffee. And to me, this is no different. So their technique is buy an excellent cask, bottle it straight, don't mess with it, no coloring, no filtration, just what the original cask was, that's what it is. And just give people a little heads up about Bunnehabhain. I don't think I've had this in quite a while, so I've definitely not had this in a while. Oh man, so briny, so salty, so smoky. So Bunnehabhain is actually an Islay whiskey, located on the east shore of Islay. They were founded in 1883, so they go back a ways, and they are neighbors of Coolila. I love Coolila as well. Their water source is the Margadale River, and this bad boy, this 24-year-old, is 47.2%. So again, that's above the 45% mark. Distilled in 1989, bottled in 2014, and this is cask number 5787. And I wanted to try something sort of a little peated, because this has definitely got some peat characteristics to it, but it's not going to be in the the Coolila or Lafroig or Lagavulin or anything like that, or Ardbeg. It's just going to have a little bit of smokiness to it. And I wanted to kind of play that off against that Evernorth tobacco to see how it stood up. So I'm going to have some sippies and let you talk about your second pairing of the night.
You go right ahead. You went highfalutin. I went pretty lowfalutin. I went with a Johnny Walker. This is Johnny Walker, the Explorer's Collection. For people who don't know, the Explorer's Collection is duty-free only whiskeys from Johnny Walker. So these are whiskeys that you can only buy in a duty-free shop in an airport, or sometimes like in a port, if you're on a cruise ship or something like that, you can buy it. Now, this is only, I believe I paid about $28 a bottle for this, for a liter.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a steal. And in my opinion, this is better than like Johnny Walker Black, and maybe on par with, even though different than like Johnny Walker Green. Is that the next one up? Or is that Platinum? That's
I can't remember now. Black. I think it might be Platinum. Green is the only true single malt Johnny Walker that they produce.
Oh, okay.
And they took it away for a while. That I was
thinking of. Yep. So this is called the Spice Road because all of the Explorer's Collection is influenced by world travel. So they've got, the only other one that I can recall off the top of my head is the Royal Route, which is, of course, inspired by the route between, I think, the U.S. and England. But it's a little more U.K.-centric, aimed towards the U.K. palate a little bit more. And this one is inspired by the Spice Road, which is Asian-inspired kind of flavors. I discovered this on the first cigar safari that I went on. Rob and I got pretty deep into a bottle on the, I think it was the second night, and then we both bought some on the way home. So drinking this always makes me think of Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like and I'm going to be a little arrogant here. I feel like I started the bottle tradition for Safari. And it's, yeah, because it goes back 3 years now. But I think it's a great tradition to buy a bottle either in duty free or from your local, you know, establishment, whether it's whiskey or bourbon or whatever it might be, and bring it down with you. And I agree, like, there's nothing better for me than trying something I haven't tried at a, like, when I'm down in Nicaragua smoking cigars.
Oh, yeah.
Try a bunch of different whiskey. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just a great place to, I mean, the atmosphere there is better than it's going to be when you're just trying something in a bar at home, or buying a bottle and trying it at home, or trying it at your friend's house. The atmosphere at Safari is, like, unique. Mm-hmm. You don't get that atmosphere anywhere else in the world. And when you find something like this, it evokes those kind of memories of how much fun you had in Nicaragua.
I agree. And you are reminded of the people that you went down with. Like you said, that reminds me of Rob.
Exactly.
Just keeping an eye on my lighting here because it's wind's picked up, so hopefully I don't get a light standard in my head halfway through the show.
Yeah, well, I'll yell loud enough to revive you, hopefully.
I appreciate that. So I'll let you have a chance. By the way, I really like that Explorer's Edition. It's actually one of my favorites as well, but I always end up picking something else up when I'm in duty free.
But
there's so many options. But that Explorer's Edition is remarkably good, especially for the price.
Yeah.
So, talking about this Boonehaven, one of the things with peated whiskey is, and Tripp and I were kind of talking about that after the Octomore tasting that I had last night. The longer you age the whiskey, the more that peated smoke in there goes away. So if you're not a fan of heavily peated whiskeys, if you try an older whiskey, like any peated whiskey, any Islay whiskey, any Lowlands whiskey that's been peated, you will find that peat really fades quickly past the 12-year mark. And I think for me, really once you get to the 18, 20-year mark, the peat just kind of becomes shadow of its former self. So here it's sort of faded into this really nice, it's not a peaty smoke, it's like a fire or a campfire smoke. So I take a sip and I've got some really nice fruit quality, like melon fruit, maybe some pear in there, and it's just really delicate. Then I get a little bit of briny character, and then I get a little bit of smoke to finish, and the smoke just kind of sits and lingers between sips. And I think it's a good choice. I think if I'd gone with a more heavily peated whiskey, even I'm concerned about something like a Talisker or an Oban, I think might even have too much smoke for this cigar. It might actually run over some of the nuances, but sorry, I'm just repositioning myself here. So again, I don't get a light standard in my face. But yeah, it's nice. It adds a very different element to this cigar. I'm going to have to actually take some more sips and puffs, which is just awful, I know.
And, oh, terrible.
Try and wrap my head around it and let you talk about how that first couple sips are going.
I'm a big fan of the scotch, like I said before. It's got a sort of a apple sweetness, but it's a little bit more, it's a little less of like the apple sweetness that you get from like a Glenlivet, mm-hmm. and a little bit darker, maybe more like a stewed apple. Mm. And there are definitely some spice kind of flavors in there, cinnamon. I get a little bit of like star anise. Mm-hmm. And then on the nose, there's a surprising amount of peat, which you don't find in most of the Johnny Walkers, except for Black and Double Black, of course. But this one's definitely got a touch of peat in there that I barely pick up on the palate, but is definitely present on the nose. And it, like you were saying, it brings out some of the sweetness in the cigar, mm-hmm. which is the opposite of what the bourbon did. Mm-hmm. The bourbon really cut the sweetness of the cigar and brought out some other flavors, while this brings out some of the sweeter flavors in the cigar.
Yeah, it's strange because it's really polar opposites on the flavor map in terms of how this is pairing. But it works. It's definitely a contrasting pairing for sure. Because I think what's happening here is it's really highlighting that character we're talking about the Aganorsa tobacco. It's really highlighting that for me, and it's really tough to sort of wrap my head around that flavor profile.
Oh, there's the light.
There we go.
You knew it was going to happen. You called it. I think that now that I'm thinking about it a little more, that flavor is almost like a caramelized steak. Like when you get a real good char on a steak and it ends up being a little bit sweet, that's kind of what the sweetness is like for me.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I mean, it like I said, it is tough for me to wrap my head around it, but it is very tasty.
It's a very difficult flavor to pinpoint.
It is, and because I mean, it isn't, you know, it isn't immediately like anything else that I've typically had, which is I think what, you know, makes it so attractive, because you're not smoking something that you've had before. You're smoking something that's different than what you've had before.
Yeah, even though we've smoked the cigar several times.
Yeah, many, many times. So this is really good. I'm going to let you talk about that pairing a little bit. I did, unfortunately, have a little spillage accident there.
Oh, no. Alcohol abuse?
Which is really sad with a 24-year-old whiskey.
Oh, man.
But I'm going to reposition myself here and give you a moment here just to talk while I do that, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So this scotch, I'm definitely getting – I wouldn't be surprised if it was – well, actually, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was aged in bourbon barrels, because you definitely get a touch of bourbon characteristic. Obviously, not as much as you would in a bourbon, and less than you do in like a Laphroaig or something like that that's very bourbon forward. I'm trying to place the sweetness that I'm getting from this, and I think maple syrup might be the best, or maybe brown sugar, like a caramelized brown sugar.
The sweetness off the whiskey?
Yeah. And there's like a straw flavor in there that I can't quite place either. I would call it straw, like hay, barnyard, almost.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it goes fantastically with the cigar. I'm really surprised that two polar opposite pairings kind of play just as well with the cigar.
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes it work. I mean, I think this cigar could probably go with a lot of different Highland, like a lot of, you know, very traditional, typical Scotch whiskies where you've got, you know, that stone fruit and the brightness kind of along the same lines as the bourbon, but just without that spiciness. I think that would go fine. But I think what makes this work so well is that smokiness. I think it's that just that hint of smokiness that's really drawing out the nuances in the cigar. But again, I think that's a fine line to walk, because it'd be very easy to go overboard with an Ardbeg. As much as I love Ardbeg, I think it would probably run the cigar over.
Yeah. And I've noticed that in most airports, they have tastings of the Johnny Walker Explorers Club collection. So if you do happen to be in an airport, make sure you see if they're doing a tasting and pick up some Explorers Club if you are traveling abroad.
Who doesn't like tastings?
Exactly.
Especially
when you're traveling. In an airport, it's always after 5 o'clock.
Exactly.
Oh, that was close. Good save.
All right. So apparently I'm just going to hold up my light because out of nowhere it's decided to get windy, which is just awesome and fantastic. So I'll do that for a couple minutes. Just remind our audience that we're tuned into Sharing Our Pairing episode 97. We're doing one of the top cigars of 2016 pairing tonight, the Warp Maestro del Tiempo. And it's the 5205 Lonsdale. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. Of course, we are picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Trippy Trent. I almost said Robbie Rass. That would have been embarrassing. That would have been embarrassing indeed. So I'm going to try and grab my last pairing of the night tonight. In fact, while I reposition, maybe I'll let you go first and talk about your
that works for me
pairing of tonight.
So I'm going with a brewery that I know has been featured several times before. This is Evil Twin Brewing, which, of course, they are the Nomadic Brewers from New York. And this beer is their Imperial Stout, Even More Jesus. Dennis, who I know that you met on Cigar Safari,
mm-hmm.
He sent me a can of this last summer, and it blew me away as just a non-coffee or bourbon-aged Imperial Stout. And just recently, I started being able to find it locally, so I had to pick up a can. It is a very imperial stout coming in at 12% ABV. It's, I mean, if you look at the color there, it's basically motor oil. It's got almost no head. Even when I poured it, it had, I mean, less than an eighth of an inch of head. And it's just black as can be and viscous. For people who don't know, Evil Twin is, as I said before, a nomadic brewer. They don't actually have their own brewing facility. They use other companies' brewing facilities, sometimes around the country, but usually, like this one is brewed in Stratford, Connecticut. They don't usually say exactly which brewery they brewed at. At least this one doesn't. But they always make fantastic beers. I've never had something from them that I thought was terrible. A lot of people like their Imperial Biscotti Stout. I feel like I'm getting the name wrong.
Yeah, the Biscotti Break, I think.
Biscotti Break, Imperial Stout. I think that's based on the same recipe as this because they're pretty similar. Though this one's a little more your standard Imperial Stout.
They kind of remind me a little bit of Fred Rui from Nomad in the sense that, you know, Fred doesn't have his own factory. And Fred's Martial Law, of course, was number two on the top cigars of 2016. But he doesn't have his own factory. So he is nomadic, thus the name Nomad Cigars. And like you said, Evil Twin Brewing does the same thing. They don't have their own facilities, so they basically have a recipe that they take to the brewer, wherever that brewer might be, and then they come up with something really interesting, which I think is kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. And Mickler does the same thing, who I know that you guys have talked on the show about the rivalry between Evil Twin and Mickler, because they're actually the owner of Evil Twin is the twin brother of the guy who owns Mickler, and they don't exactly get along.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, because they both make amazing beers.
They do. Hopefully I don't get nailed here again. I just adjusted my light, so hopefully things will be better here. Part of the good thing here is the wind means that there's some warm weather rolling in. The bad thing is means I'm getting a heck of a crosswind, so a bit of a drag. So this is an odd one. This comes from my my Christmas beer selection. I got one of those cool beer calendars.
Ooh.
And I did that because, you know, it gives me a chance to sample beers from around the world. So this is Fabryka Piwa, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong because I can't speak Polish. So it might actually be Fabryka Piwa. But they're located in Częstochowa, Poland. I had to look at the pronunciation because, of course, it is spelled in Polish, which means there's a bunch of consonants stringed together. And I do not speak Polish, but it is Częstochowa, Poland. And it is the first beer that, as I understand, first stout that they've exported. So this is the Deep Space Foreign Extra Stout. I'll try and pick this up here without spilling it on myself. It is getting a little frosty here, but you can see very dark. I mean, really what you'd expect out of a stout. It's got that nice motor oil color to it. It's a little on the thinner side than, you know, typically what I see in a lot of sort of, you know, when I hear extra stout, I kind of think of an imperial stout. This is definitely not an imperial stout. This is kind of in the porter quality or porter level. It's 6.5% ABV, 50 IBUs. Oh, and I have to say, some of the American brewers out there really need to step their game up for their website, because this Polish website is on point. They give me all the specs, and I'm going to run through them, but that's my little shout-out, my call-out to all the brewers out there who I know are tuned in. Step up your website game, because they got a lot of information there. So it's 6.5% ABV, 50 IBUs, original gravity of 1.065, 16 degrees Play-Doh. And then I'm going to read off the grains because there's a lot of them. Pilsen, Carafa, Kararuma, which I've never heard of.
Kararuma. Never heard of that one.
Munich, Molodnin, Kermunich, roasted barley, of course, and then just straight up barley. And then they even tell you the yeast strain. They're using an S04 yeast strain. And only one hop, which is Marinka, which I assume is sounds like a Polish or Eastern European hop, but smells fantastic. It smells very, very stewed plum, rich espresso, chocolate. It's kind of everything I want in a stout. So I'm going to try and take a sip of this, and hopefully you've had a chance to have a couple sips of your evil twin there, and you can talk about
course.
That.
This has a ton of espresso character. I mean, I could be tricked into believing this was a coffee stout, and there's no coffee or anything added to this. It's just a plain imperial stout. The nose is definitely a lot of coffee, a little bit of chocolate. And then on the palate, it's very, very viscous. It kind of sticks to your palate, which I find kind of overruns the cigar a little bit because it coats your palate so heavily that you can't taste the cigar for a few minutes.
I gotcha.
After you take a sip. Fantastic beer. Not sure it's a great pairing, but I'm enjoying it nonetheless. It's definitely got a stewed plum actually is the perfect way to describe the sweetness. Like stewed plum and really dark brown sugar. Not quite molasses, but dark brown sugar kind of flavor.
It's funny because I think I'm getting, and I don't know if you're just planning it in my head, but I'm kind of getting a similar character, and I don't know if it's because the cigar is those flavors are being drawn out of the cigar, or the cigar is bringing those flavors out of the beer, but I'll let you continue. I just wanted to step in there.
Sure. I get, after taking a sip, like I said before, it kind of runs over the palate, but I get almost no sweetness from the cigar after taking a sip. But I still get a little bit of spice, a little bit of that kind of umami kind of flavor that we were talking about before, just without the sweetness. And the spice is definitely still there as well, even though this isn't a super spicy cigar. It's just got kind of a touch of spice.
Yeah, on my Deep Space for an Extra Stout, I was getting the, like I said, the coffee notes on the nose, but in the palate, like you said, again, I think, you know, it's almost like we're just describing the same beer here because I'm getting a lot more of a stewed fruit characteristic off the beer than I typically get off or what I experience with any stout I've had before. And I think plum was a great way to describe it. It's just, it's that stone fruit, that rich, deep, dank stone fruit flavor.
Yeah.
It's still got that sort of, you know, nice, thick, malty characteristic, that sweet malty characteristic. And it is maybe a little bit too sweet for this cigar because, as you said, I took a couple sips of the beer and it's really tough for me to pick out flavors in the cigar after doing that right away.
Yeah, I think stout was the wrong pairing for the cigar. I think we hit it out of the park with bourbon and scotch. And we both went wrong by going with stout. I think a brown ale or maybe even like a dark IPA would go well with the cigar. But I think an imperial stout is the wrong call. A porter might go okay, but I think still that would kind of be overrunning the cigar a bit.
Yeah, I think even thinking back to our winter spice show, I think a winter spice ale might also be an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. Only because the malty characteristics of the winter spice ale, you know, wouldn't overrun, you know, the cigar. Because again, I think it's not the alcohol content; it's that intense malty flavor off the beer.
Yeah,
it's like a medium plus to full. And really, I think when you're pairing with this Maestro del Tiempo, really, I think you're looking to keep it into the medium realm for bodiness, because otherwise you're going to run over really a cigar that's quite nuanced.
Oh yeah, very nuanced. It's really an interesting cigar because it's got a lot of nuance, but a lot of flavors that are kind of really in your face. So as you smoke through it, like a lot of really great cigars, you start off getting those primary flavors. And as you smoke it, you start to kind of discover the different levels of flavor that are in there.
Mm-hmm. So after not taking a sip of the beer for, you know, a minute or two, the flavors of the cigar definitely rebound. So there's no question in my mind that what's happening is that stout is just really shocking the palate. It's just taking the palate over, which is not surprising. You know, I think typically it is tougher to pair a stout with cigar. You know, usually you have to go with like a really spicy Habano, or you have to go with like a big Pennsylvanian or Connecticut broadleaf.
You know, Pennsylvania broadleaf would go so well with this kind of stout.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, thinking back to the Bishop's blend from Black Label Trading Company, I think that would be a really good pairing with a stout because it's got, you know, it's a much more in-your-face cigar. It's not,
yeah.
I mean, it is still layered, but it's a much more intense smoking experience, and I think that's probably a better choice with a stout. This Warped, just not a good choice. I think we both kind of erred on the stout choice, but I'm thinking a winter spice ale, like you said. You know, even a sessionable saison or an IPA might be an interesting choice. I think
I think a saison would be a good choice with this. Actually, I hadn't thought of that.
I just think the funkiness that I typically get off a saison would be an interesting matchup, because you know I tend not to find saisons very sweet. So I think the sweetness off the cigar would kind of offset some of that saison funkiness, which I know Rob was sometimes put off a little bit, that yeasty funk.
I don't get that. But Doug just had a good suggestion, which is a Scotch ale. I think that would go really well with this.
I think what you'd have to be careful on with a Scotch ale, because some Scotch ales can be like really boozy.
Oh yeah, you don't want an imperial Scotch ale with this kind of thing.
No, but like a normal typical 6.5-7% Scotch ale. I think he's right. I think that'd be really interesting. It would still allow the cigar to sort of flex its flavor muscles and stand out, but stout's the wrong way to go. I'm not even sure a porter, like I'm thinking chocolate porter might even be a little too sweet for this cigar.
Yeah, I think a porter would probably be too much, unless it was, like we were talking about, maybe the last show, might have been the show before that, when we did a couple of stouts, and we were talking about that stout versus porter kind of quality. Mm-hmm. Even a really light-bodied porter, I think, might work well with this, but once you start getting anywhere near like that stout heaviness that you get in like an imperial porter, you're going to overrun the cigar easily.
Yeah, I think going back, it's interesting how well those first two, the bourbon whiskey and the Scotch whiskey, went. I think there's, I mean, it's clearly established that the Wartmeister del Tiempo with a bourbon is a no-brainer pairing. That is, you know, hands down. And I think it'd be interesting to try, maybe in a future show we'll do a vertical of a couple different bourbons to kind of see, you know, a spicy bourbon versus maybe, you know, like obviously the Knob Creek worked for me and the Elijah Craig worked for you, but maybe stepping it up into some of the other bourbons that are out there that have different flavor characteristics and see how they stand up.
Yeah, I think that would be a no-brainer to do a show like that and see the different types of bourbons and the different flavor profiles that you can get from a bourbon, see how they match up to this Maestro del Tiempo.
I also think that, you know, typical Scotch whiskey is almost too easy. Like this, to me, you know, if you threw pretty much any Highland whiskey at this, I think it'd go perfectly. And I'm reminded of the Glenlivet Nadura, which Rob and I crushed at Las Vegas a couple years back. Glenlivet Nadura, although it's a little bit, it's got a little bit of heat to it, a little bit of spiciness to it.
Yeah.
I think it would still go really, really well with this cigar.
Somebody's mad over there in Canada. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The Glenlivet Nadura is just a fantastic dram, obviously. But I think that those flavors would go too well with this cigar. It would just be perfect.
So I think for me, I don't know that I can pick a favorite between the bourbon and the Boone Hobbins Scotch. I think both are really, really good. You know, the bourbon, I think, was very complimentary. The whiskey was very contrasting. Both managed to bring out some really interesting things in the cigar. And I think, you know, conversely, the cigar brought out some really interesting things in the spirit, and both of those really worked for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. We had different bourbons, different scotches, but I think we both had kind of the same experience with the pairing, where they just both went together so well, but in very different ways.
So yeah, I think we'll have to mark this down as a redux to try with maybe a vertical of bourbon, a vertical of scotch. Try that out. See what that looks like. What I'm excited about for next week is the weather's going to be a lot nicer. The weather's expected to warm up about 30 degrees, 20, 30 degrees, freedom. So I'm pretty excited about that. That means I'll be a little bit less bundled, a little bit more warm. I'll just kind of wrap up the show to talk about the whiskey tasting I went to last night, because it is relevant. We are a pairing show. So I went to a whiskey pairing last night, and it was the Octomore, which we've featured on the show before. And this was basically Octomore 4.1, 5.1, 6.1, 6.3, 7.1, 7.3, and then the 10.1 second edition. I think, is that right?
Have we got them? I didn't know there was a 10.1.
There's a 10.1. So that's their most recent bottling, which is the, well, I shouldn't say the most recent because it's the second edition of the 10-year bottling. So it's the oldest expression. And I don't have my notes on me, but I think it was the 7.3 was like, it was either the 7.3 or the 6.3. Maybe been the 6.3 was like 239 ppms.
Wow. That's nuts.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's crazy, right? Because and for those who aren't aware, PPMs is a measure of phenol content in whiskey. Really, it's supposed to, you know, like IBUs and beer telling you bitterness, the PPM is supposed to tell you just how peaty, how much peat really it is.
It's a scientific measure of how peaty it is.
Ironically, the one that was over 200 ended up being pretty delicate and nuanced, which makes no sense to me,
I still don't understand. I've had a few of those Octomores, and I just don't understand how they could be so peaty, but they just balance it out so well. And you end up with something delicate that should be blowing your palate out.
And like I said before the show, all of them were, almost all of them were well over 60%. I think the average for the night was like 61.5 or 62% alcohol by volume, which was, I mean, many of them were way too sessionable, over 60%. And as a result, I was doing a little rough this morning and this afternoon. But the 10.1, the second edition 10.1 was phenomenal and definitely illustrated where peat starts to fall off rapidly on a peated whiskey, because even though it was at, I think, 169 ppm, you really had to reach for the smoke in it, which was surprising.
Yeah, and you notice that a lot in the like doing a Lafroy vertical, because I mean Lagavulin and Balmore and a lot of the other Islay distilleries, they don't have a huge range of different ages. While Lafroy kind of does, they start with the 10 and they go up to the 25. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge difference in the amount of peat that you get going from the 10 to the 18 and the 25. I think there's one somewhere in between there.
Yeah, and definitely, like I said, definitely the peat for sure. And I think it's just the interaction of the wood, that character that's brought out of the spirit from the wood just really eliminates a lot of that smoky character. So you know, I used to think a really young peated whiskey was kind of a drag. The truth of the matter is, if you really want a lot of peat characteristic out of a whiskey, you got to have at a younger age. Otherwise, you're going to lose a lot of that peat quality if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, if you're like a, I don't know if there's a word for it, a peat fiend. Mm-hmm. If you love peat, you're not going to want to go over like 14, 15 years max, because that's where the peat really, really starts to fall off. And like a Lafroy 25, you're barely getting any of that peat quality that you're used to in a Lafroy 10.
Yeah. I did pick up a bottle of the 7.1 cause it's really good. It's a nice successor to the 6.1. It's different. It was reasonably affordable and the flavor profile was really a great successor to the 6.1. The 10.1 I would have picked up as well, but unfortunately the 10.1 is like double the price of the 7.1. So I don't know if that price is necessarily going to come down, because I think the price is really just a side effect of the age statement. But it was very good.
Yeah. And Octomore, I mean, 5-year Octomores are already a little pricey.
So, yeah, I think going back to this Maestro del Tiempo, no-brainer pairing with bourbon, no-brainer pairing with really any kind of whiskey. I think it'd be interesting to do some redux of some different kinds of lighter beers to see how it stands up.
Yeah.
Just put it through its paces. I think, you know, again, we just picked beers that were a little bit too full-bodied. But we'll definitely be back next week. It'll be a little bit warmer for me. Hopefully the wind will have died down.
I will not be here next week.
All right.
You remember, I will be on assignment.
Well, that's right.
Going to Nicapuro, the Nicaraguan Cigar Festival.
That's right. So you'll have to give some updates on Cigar Federation of how that festival is going.
There's definitely going to be a couple posts on Cigar Federation. Hopefully some video. I'm not sure quite what the experience is going to be like, but I'm sure it'll be fun, and I'll bring back any relevant information to the Fed Hits.
Fantastic. So we will be taking a 1-week break, a 1-week hiatus. We will have our normal cigar chat tomorrow night, the 12th. It'll be our rant edition, so you want to tune in for that. It'll be very interesting and amusing. So we'll be back probably on January the 25th, which will be after my birthday, for another live sharing our pairings. Appreciate everyone who tuned in live. Appreciate all our podcast listeners out there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. If you have any suggestions for the show, any feedback, feel free to drop a comment on YouTube or on the Cigar Federation page. Or, of course, like I say, you can email me, surgeon@cigarfederation.com. As we say in Cigar Sharing Pairings, drink better, but drink less.